The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
MSW Media.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Dan Dunn. And this is part two of our summer wine extravaganza.
That was horrible.
I thought it was good. That, of course, is what we're drinking's resident wine guru. Is that a title you like, or do you want a better title?
It feels a little pretentious.
How about wine woman?
Wine lady.
American wino. American. Oh, that's me.
Oh.
Sorry, already got that one. We'll come up with a title the end of the show. But you are Claire Copey.
I am.
Of Psalm TV. Yay. Everybody, come on, give it up for Claire. Yes. And we are coming to you from the private dining room in Hatchet Hall in Culver City, California. Hatchet Hall, one of the finest restaurants in the nation, and they have the Michelin star to prove it. They just got it. And Jay, what does that mean? Like, you tell people what it means to get a Michelin star as a restaurant.
I mean, that's the highest honor you can get as a restaurant. You have to work really hard to get that, so it's a level of excellence. One is incredibly hard to get. There are a few restaurants that have two, even three, which is just madness. And that's a lot of pressure, because once you get that, you got to keep it. Because you don't get it forever. They reassess you.
And if you lose the star,
that's bad.
You may as well, yeah.
So, no pressure, Hatchet Hall.
But we're going to do wine today. We got five of them, Claire. And I'm going to let you, as our resident wine title to be determined, you are going to pick the first of these five wines. What should we start with?
I'm going to pick the Justin, because that's my boyfriend's name.
The Ja.
I know, gross.
All right, gross. Justin is, that is kind of gross. No, it's from the Central Coast. It's in Paso Robles, right?
Yes.
That's where.
That is true.
And by the way, everybody, so you know, plug a future show. I'm going to be going to the Firestone Walker Beer Festival up there. Invitational. Apparently, it's the most exclusive beer fest in America.
Oh.
And we'll be doing an episode from up there, and that's in Paso Robles. Tell us about that region a little bit.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a very warm region, gorgeous region. They're doing a lot of, there's a lot of experimenting going there as far as wine. But they're using a lot of Rhone varietals. Those do pretty well in that region because it is warmer, like the Southern Rhone.
Okay.
So a lot of Grenache, Syrahs. There's some Zinfandels there as well. A friend of mine actually does a really cool, she does single vineyard Chenin Blancs from Paso and all over kind of the Central Coast. But she does, yeah, they're really nice.
And these weren't varietals that were common to this area years ago, right?
No. Most wine regions before Prohibition in California were planted, originally to the Mission grape, because it was the Missions that were planted out, that were out here. So they were, it's this grape that's not particularly great. But yeah, a lot of those old vines were the Mission grape. And then there were a lot of Italian varietals in California. And then you had a little bit of phylloxera, which is a root louse that wiped out some vineyards. Prohibition, which was hilarious. And then
time when America thought it was good that adults weren't allowed to drink for 13 years?
Such a great idea. And they didn't. No one touched a drop that time.
How about a Fresca?
Oh. Ah.
So you've got the varietals have changed that we're growing here. And Paso, you'd say, is one of the leaders in
the Rhone varietals. But you also have this lovely Sauvignon Blanc, which does like the warmth. It likes sunny sunny, bright climates. It doesn't like excessive heat, so there is a nice dichotomy to the weather in Paso. You do get the nice, bright, sunny, hot days, but it does cool off at night, like any good wine region does.
On the last episode, we did some Chardonnay, and now we got to just talk broad strokes, the differences between Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc.
Sure. Well, Sauvignon Blanc is part of a family that has a compound called pyrazines. So these are, this is a characteristic that will exhibit itself in the wine. You're going to have lots of notes of bell peppers or jalapenos. So Sauvignon Blanc is one. It's the parent grape of another grape that we're going to drink, Cabernet Sauvignon. Pretty popular. Maybe you've heard of it.
I think I have.
You may have. It's kind of everywhere.
Yeah, it's going. Okay.
So often you're going to get notes of bell pepper and Cabernet Sauvignon, and then its other parent with Sauvignon Blanc is Cabernet Franc. So that's another one that you get. Also, Merlot has a little bit of it as well.
Cab Franc, I saw a lot on the East Coast. When you go to sort of the Finger Lakes and all that, and even down in Virginia, I don't know if it just grows better back there, but I'm seeing a lot of that on the East, which is really starting to come up, that, you know, all of those regions
it's
out there.
Cool.
And, you know, if you start, I would say, probably from New York, upper New York, down to Virginia.
Yeah,
anything above and below that, it gets a little bit trickier, but just because of the weather. So, okay, so this, the Justin we have is the 2022. It's $18 a bottle.
$14.40 if you're in a wine club, apparently.
If you're in the wine club, you can get it for $14.40. The Wine Society. We're going to go. All right, let's do this. Let's smell it. Okay.
That's nicely in balance. It's not as...
This is floral.
It's pretty. It is floral. That's a really good note. So Sauvignon Blanc, like any other grape, changes a lot depending on where it's grown. I think a lot of people are most familiar with Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. They've done a wonderful job of marketing that grape. It is originally a French grape, however. So you have Bordeaux Blanc, you have Sancerre, which is made with the Sauvignon Blanc grape. And in places like Sancerre and Bordeaux, where it's blended with other grapes, but you get a lot of the florality because the grapefruit and the green pepper and that like bombastic flamboyant character that you get in a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is a little toned down. Yeah. It's a little more elegant and subdued.
Okay, you know what?
But it's definitely
floral. This isn't in line with, but what I got immediately when I noticed it was a little bit of, you know, the jasmine, is that?
Absolutely.
That got me right away when I was smelling this thing.
Or like
so
Lily of the Valley.
Okay. We're tasting this. I'm going, this is sort of a lighter, I think medium to light wine, right?
I would agree. I would say it's on the lighter side. Still has the citrus, the grapefruit that Sauvignon Blanc can be famous for. More subtle notes of the green bell pepper, which I like. You don't want anything to be too out of whack or out of balance. And then stone fruit, peaches, nectarines.
Yeah, getting that
really
for
nice.
Sure.
You know, Sauvignon Blanc also has a note of cat piss.
There's a term for that. There's a word for that, isn't it?
People say tomcat or what is it?
Yeah.
Not elderberry. Is it gooseberry? They'll say, I don't know.
I wrote a piece years and years ago when I used to write for Playboy called How to Kill It at Wine Tastings. And I came up with all these descriptors that were just, and some of them were ones that I actually heard. I remember being at a wine tasting and the guy said,
there's a lot.
He's getting wet yak wool.
That was probably a Chenin Blanc.
And I felt like going, when the fuck did you ever been around a wet yak?
You haven't?
I haven't personally spent a lot of, but you'll get when they'll say cigar box and you hear, and I get those, I get it, but I've been at tastings where it's like they're trying to outdo themselves.
Oh, for sure.
What bizarre thing they can equate this scent to. Okay, one of the things it says here, one of the key features of this wine is whole cluster pressed and fermented at cool temperatures in stainless steel tanks, no malolactic. We talked about malolactic before.
Did.
So talk us through malolactic versus no malolactic. Why would you do it and why wouldn't you do it?
That all depends on the winemaker's choice of what they want that finished wine to taste like. If you're doing it, it's again releasing this compound called diacetyl that softens the harsher acidic notes potentially and releases that creaminess, the texture, and butter notes. So that's a decision that the winemaker is going to make. Do I want this to go through partial malolactic fermentation? Because they can halt it as soon as they've achieved that finished wine that they want. Or do you want to go full malolactic? So it really depends what they want to do. This has seen none, so it's very pure.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems like in recent years, I've seen a lot of winemakers getting away from malolactic. Is that
seem
to be the trend?
Or they're doing partial. Again, like anything, any wine, you want it to be in good balance. A lot of times when you go full malolactic, it can get a little heavy and clumsy and cumbersome. Just like if you're using 100% new oak and you're not even really integrating it very well, it throws the whole wine out of whack. And it suggests that you're hiding something. Like, are the grapes not good quality? Is that why you're using all this oak? And by the way, oak is very expensive. So that's a really expensive over-seasoned steak, you know, yes. But it's a shitty steak, basically, but they're hiding it. So I like an oak to seasoning a lot.
Well, even things like filtering, you know, you're seeing wines that are doing the unfiltered wines.
And, oh, absolutely.
And is that mainly a cosmetic thing when they're filtering to get rid of it so it doesn't look cloudy?
Usually. But again, it's also a texture thing, because if you don't filter it and you have those little particles, the particulates, it's going to give it a little more texture, a little more creaminess, which is why typically like Pet Nats and the super unfiltered ones that have chunks, you know, floating around in it, they have that richer
texture.
Got it. Yeah.
I don't know, you haven't eaten here, we've talked about this, but we're going to eat here, but the fish at Hatchet Hall, they do some fish. I've had the salmon here, I've had some other, like, and I got to tell you, I think this wine with a fish
absolutely
would be
absolutely
delicious.
Yeah, this would be great with, like, one of those, like, seared ahi steaks that maybe has, like, a really nice bright salsa, like the dish I made in the last season of the last episode of Sparklers.
The one that you won.
The one that I won.
Yes. There's a show on SOM TV called Sparklers, a competition show, and Claire won it.
Somehow.
And it got nominated for a Beard Award. We talked about this on the last show.
Oh, yeah.
We should talk about it some more because you're very talented. Let me ask you this, though. You mentioned that, the seared ahi. What about white, red, meat? Can you drink a Sauvignon Blanc with red meat?
Sure. Why not? You can do whatever you want. Honestly, some of my favorite wine pairings with steaks and with the red meats, champagne, a sparkling wine. If you have enough acidity to cut through that protein and the fat, you're golden. Do I think Sauvignon Blanc would be the best with a steak? Probably not, but it wouldn't be bad.
Okay,
probably wouldn't blow your tits off. You know,
I mentioned on the last show that I had dinner at the where did I go? Waldorf Astoria in Beverly Hills. Now, the wine that we had with that was the Schaefer Cabernet from Napa. That's a big...
Was it a young Schaefer, too?
It was... I don't know, because they just poured it. They didn't even...
My guess is it was probably, like a 2020, so it's a young...
Yeah, young and that's like a big Napa cab.
Big, you know? You need a big steak with that.
This is a damn good wine.
Oh, yeah. Everybody loves the isosceles, their cab.
Next up, we have. What do you want to go next? Where do you want to go next?
Do you want to do a rosé or do you want to do the other Sauvignon Blanc and compare?
I think you want to do the other.
I do. I just like
okay,
to. I like to do
it.
That.
Let's do it. I'm gonna
I like
go,
to do it.
Let's
I
dump.
Think you know. Let's
dump. So now we have a 11-11.
Make a wish.
Why is that?
11-11. Make a wish.
Is that what you're supposed to do?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, 11-11 is the name of the winery. It's the 2022 Bechstoffer Sauvignon Blanc. This is from Rutherford area of Napa Valley, which is that's one of the best growing regions, certainly in the.
Do you know how much an acre of land in Napa costs without the vines?
How much?
In like a premium area, $500,000 for 1 acre of land with no vines planted to it.
Wow, and Rutherford would be top of the heap.
It'd be up there for
okay.
sure.
Okay. So this again,
madness.
I'm excited to try this. Mm. And now we're going to
Napa.
All right, let me get this thing up here. Okay. All right.
I feel like this is saying a little.
I'm going to take a little nose on this.
Getting a lot of the grapefruit is, yeah. Again, still not as bombastic and flamboyant as some New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs. Some, not all. But,
Oh, wow.
I'm getting a lot of the
all right.
grapefruit pith.
Right, do you say piss?
Pith.
Oh, I was like grapefruit's not piss.
Like, can't piss. On. Grapefruit piss.
You're obsessed with piss on this episode. Pith. P I T H.
Pith. You filthy people.
Pith. Okay. Right off the bat, this one to me is a little bit fuller bodied than the one we just had.
Yes.
Which I would say this: somebody who. When you were talking about those New Zealand, this one to me feels more substantial than that. And I mean that in terms of, this is a bigger wine.
Yes.
Am I wrong on that? Like this is on the more robust.
This is a Napa Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc, yeah.
Typically using some oak. And I believe they are using some oak on this. Not a ton of new oak or anything like that, but it's softening the acidity. It's giving it a little more unctuousness.
So 20% new.
20% new. There you go.
And we're at 13.7.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Percent alcohol.
Yeah. Higher alcohol.
So that's, do you think that's on the higher end for this?
It's not aggressive, but it happens in Napa. No.
Okay.
I've seen higher. For sure.
So the Melrose Vineyard is where they did this. You're going to get a lot of the minerality is going on here, but also, like you said, that oak, I don't want to say it's not butter. What is it?
Like, it's not. It's just softening the edges. This is again only 20% new oak. These people seem to know what they're doing with oak. It's pretty well integrated. It's not giving out huge notes of vanilla or clove or anything like that. Maybe a little clove, but it's softening the edges. Okay. Sauvignon Blanc can be very high acid, like screechingly so, and so they want to soften it up a little bit. What year was this? 2022. She's young.
So Bechstoffer is known more for their reds, right? Okay. Their Cabernet. I mean, that's, you know, that's where that goes. I think this is their first vineyard designate Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, cool.
And,
how exciting.
Yeah, this is,
I love that. That's, yeah.
Only 358 cases of this.
That's not much.
So that's,
Not much.
How much?
Very small.
Probably explains why it's $42 a bottle.
Yes. So it's, again, the oak, the land, how much it costs to make these. When wine gets up to that price point, you're paying for a lot of you know, hands touching that and a lot of, you know.
Now, one of the things that we haven't talked about, but I really like this bottle, okay?
It's a green,
but it almost looks like an absinthe bottle in a way, the color on this. Yeah. But I want to ask you, how important is that? If you were starting, obviously you don't want to have a shitty looking wine bottle, but I'm saying, like, do you think that, how much does that inform people's decisions? Look and go, ooh, that looks cool.
Yep.
And
I do the same thing.
I can think of, like, Charles Smith was one of the first ones to do that with, like, Kung Fu Girl and all this, where you see those bottles and you go, oh man, cool. I want that. The Prisoner was one of those ones that did that, where you look at the bottle and you go, I just want it for the, you didn't like the look of that bottle or? Cut this out. Cut this out. LJ, cut this out. Cut this part out. So I'm digging this. This 11-11. And it's a 2022. Now, do you want any age? Like, if you had this one, would you want to age?
You could age this one, and Sauvignon Blanc can age when you, especially like when you start looking at specific Sancerres and Bordeaux Blancs. Like, woof. Yeah.
Okay.
Some of those,
but how long?
Quite pricey. Like, decades in their case, sometimes.
No. Oh, yeah. Okay. So something like this, if I held this for 7-8 years, could it be
okay?
I think
so. Yeah, for sure.
See, I didn't know this, Claire, because I had some whites the other day. I was going through my thing, and I'm like, oh man, this thing's 5 years old.
It's got a lot of acidity, and because it has a slightly, it's only, what was it, 13.7% alcohol?
13.7. Yeah.
It's got a slightly elevated alcohol, so those are all things that are going to help your wine age when you have wines that are particularly high in structural characteristics like acid, tannin for red wines, and alcohol, that's going to help it age, and the oak as well. So if you drink a Barolo when it's young, it's going to be awful. It's going to rip your face off. That's with the Nebbiolo grape, and it's very high tannin, very high acid. You need the time to have it soften. This is pretty high acid.
So when you say young, we're talking about go back to Nebbiolo. When would you go, I'm not drinking this until it's at least what?
For a Barolo?
Yeah.
10.
10?
Yeah.
So this, okay,
for
just based
Barolo.
On what you've tried here with this one, it's a 22.
Mm-hmm. I liked your 7 to 8 years call on that.
So
honestly,
you're saying, like,
I would maybe open, I would 20, let this lay down for 5 years and then see.
2027, 28.
Yeah.
This is when it's at its peak.
Well, again, that's subjective. Some people like this style that's more bright and bombastic. I don't know that they designed this wine particularly to, like, age for a while. It's very enjoyable right
now. What would happen to it? What would happen to it in 4 or 5 years?
The fruit will start to become less tart, ripe, and a little bit more into the baked, desiccated. It's a little richer. You're starting to get less fruit and more earth as well. So you're probably going to start not oxidation mushroomy, but like these pretty like mushroom, like shiitake mushroom notes on this.
Okay.
You're going to get more of the earthier tertiary notes, we call them, coming out. And the fruit starts becoming more dried or baked or desiccated, yeah.
Wow, interesting.
It's very cool.
I just simply didn't know that. I always thought when you had these, you got to drink them within 3 years.
White wines can age, and there are some white wines that need age.
What's the most age you've ever had? I don't know. I'm going to assume it was a French wine, or maybe
on a white wine. Actually, I think the oldest one I had was like a 1954 table wine. It was a 375, so a half bottle. Actually, it might have been pre-war. I can't remember. It was German.
And what year was it?
I thought it was 54, but we might have had like a, actually we might have had like a 47.
So wait, and you had this how long ago?
3 years.
So like a 70-year-old wine?
Yeah.
Did it hold up? Pretty cool. Or was it?
It was tired. It was tired. So there is a point where the fruit completely fades and dries out. You don't have it anymore, but you still appreciate the wine. It wasn't vinegar, but it was very earthy. Yeah. And the color, as white wine ages, it picks up pigment, so it's like amber in the glass. As red wine ages, it loses pigment. That's what you have fallout.
It looks thinner looking.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Beautiful.
Oh, all right. This is really fascinating. Cool. I didn't know this. Yeah. So. I probably shouldn't have. You're saying I shouldn't have dumped all these white wines that I just threw out.
No, I mean,
house.
A lot of these are
Damn
not designed
it.
To age.
Okay.
You're good.
All right.
You're good.
So now, what are we going to do next? We just had the Justin. We had the 11-11. Where do you want to go next?
Rosés.
Okay. Which one
all
do you want to do?
Day. I think we should start with the Chamisol Malines.
Nope. The Malines. Okay.
It's from Chamisol.
From Chamisol, which we had on the last one. Okay. And we hope we're saying this right. Malines, M-A-L-E-N-E. This is a 2022 rosé from California, an Ode to Provence.
Oy.
Now, when you hear that, Ode to Provence, what do you think?
I think that, well, bless you, my God.
Hey, no sneezing in here, please. Katya is allergic to wine.
How dare you be a human being?
Yeah.
Like, that would solve a lot of my problems.
Because I remember last time we went out, we were drinking wine, you got all cross-eyed and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, she must be allergic to this. Yes. Clearly, it's doing something to her.
To be fair, it is slow poison.
All right, so this one, thanks for pouring it, Claire, is a cuvée, which is a blend, where each of the components are all going to be blended. So the warm growing season, this is Central Coast wine, is about as Provençal as it gets in California. Would you agree?
I'd have to taste this wine.
This is Grenache Cinsault, which you were talking
Central
about.
Coast, yeah.
From the King City area of Monterey County, which is Steinbeck, you know.
Yeah, baby.
When you get out, yeah. And then...
This is very... I will say when I was in southern France, I was kind of on the other side, more in the Languedoc area, so that's more southwest. Provence is a little east of that, but that area did remind me of California quite a bit. It's very beautiful, and you have the mountains and the sea and some, you know, higher elevation vineyards and fun experimentation as well. Those wine in France, you don't really, a lot of regions are like, no, we make Pinot Noir and you have to do it like this, or it is not, you're not able to label it as Burgundy, you know. So it's very like tradition, and in southern France there's a little more freedom. But you have, I can see that being more the Provence of
now, 73% Grenache, 11 Cinsault, 16 Vermentino.
Very cool.
So what does the Vermentino do to it?
Vermentino, from my understanding, gives it a little bit of texture.
This is a chewy wine.
It's very raspberry.
Right?
I just tasted like biting into a ripe raspberry.
Mm.
Provençal style though is typically lighter. It's a very popular style of rosé. That's pretty much everybody's go-to, and everybody wants to make the rosé in that style because it's very popular.
Okay.
Yeah.
12% alcohol on this.
Perfect.
Very fruity. You get...
Strawberry, raspberry, pine.
What about watermelon?
Absolutely watermelon.
Yeah. Right? This is like 100%. This is like a fruit bowl you have in there. But but then you're all, it's got a little bit of a spine to it too, right? That's the acidity coming in.
Absolutely correct, Dan.
Let me ask about the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you like to serve it? How do you, when you're doing rosé, do you think it should be, because I know people that love it really cold.
That's, again, all about preference. Personally, I don't want it really cold because then I'm just neutering my taste buds and I can't taste the wine, so what's the point?
Okay.
Just to get drunk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's like, fair. You want to be, so if it gets too cold, it's like when anything you have, if you got a shitty cocktail and you just put enough ice in it, you're not going to be, you don't want that. You want to be able to distinguish between whatever...
Hopefully.
The various components of that you're tasting.
Especially if I'm spending some money on a bottle of wine, I'd like to taste it. I don't want to chill it down to holy hell. Same with red. Sometimes wines are served just a little too cold. Red wines are usually served a little too warm, and white wines are usually served a little too cold.
So what's a good optimum temperature, like 57, if you have a wine fridge to do your reds?
I think I have my reds at like 58 right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have my whites and champagnes at a little cold, but like 43.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I think I keep
somewhere
my whites at about 50, and
do
then
you?
My and
See.
Then my reds about 57.
Yeah.
This Malines is a $22 bottle of rosé. That's kind of where you're looking these days for.
Yeah.
What's happening price-wise? Are you seeing wines are going up, down? Where are we at? I know they started to go up during COVID.
Oh, my gosh, what are you,
like, that significantly. What's happening now?
I think they're kind of staying in that area. They're still, everything's still pretty expensive after COVID. There was just a huge supply chain issue with so many different things. There was a glass shortage in the wine industry. My friend Megan Zobeck is the winemaker at Burgess and has her own label as well. That's fantastic. And she ran out of bottles. She was trying to bottle her sparkling and had nothing to put it in. She's like, I need to get this out of tank. Crazy. Like, everybody was having huge problems. No, prices are staying about the same. I mean, this post-COVID world, it's gotten kind of crazy. Everything's more expensive.
Everything is, yeah. But
everything is more expensive.
You know, listen.
There's a lot of cheap rosé out there, though. So.
Oh, by the way, I'm seeing here that the Vermentino was farmed by the Sagacio family, and that's a big name in California, though, in wines out here, right?
Yes.
And that...
it's an Italian grape.
Vermentino. From the Russian River Valley.
Yes,
which is also the Shishi area for wine. All right, let me ask you this. Ready? Here we go. It says, pressed under inert gas in our specialized rosé press with strict press cuts to manage color. What does that mean, Claire? Pressed under inert gas.
Okay. Well, that's the process of making rosé. I mean, you have a little bit of skin contact, right? So it's kind of like using red. It's like using red grapes to make a white wine. Depends on how long the skin contact with the juice. I'm not saying this well. It's very dependent on the skin contact with the juice because the color and pigment in wine all comes from. The skin.
From the skins,
right?
Yeah.
Your Pinot Grigio grape is dark skin. So if you do a skin contact Pinot Grigio, it's going to be a rosé. It's going to have this beautiful pink color. You could make a red wine out of Pinot Grigio if you wanted, but people don't. And you can make a white wine out of Cabernet Sauvignon if you wanted. Just take the juice directly off of the skins. So this is all just saying like they're being very specific about how long they're letting those skins come into contact with the juice to get this beautiful kind of salmon-hued wine.
Got it. Basically. Now, they also say it was drought conditions, very warm.
Shocking.
As we know, low yield for that, right? You're not going to get as much fruit.
You don't want high yields. High yields tend to equal shitty bulk wine.
It got really hot Labor Day weekend, which
what year was this?
2022.
Oh, yeah. That was a hell of a harvest.
And so what happens then is suddenly they're all scrambling to get the shit off.
Freaking out.
You got to get it off, right? Because what will happen if you let it go too far?
Then those grapes ripen up way too much and you've lost all of your beautiful acidity and structure and way too much alcohol.
And you're done.
You're done.
It's over.
Well, it's a different wine. So they said, like, I remember so many winemaker friends were just like, it was the perfect growing season. And then we just got this heat spike.
Have you been up there when during harvest and you see them go, ah,
oh yeah,
we gotta run.
I feel so bad. We filmed up there multiple times during harvest and they're all, you know, taking their time to do these interviews and stuff, but they're like, I need to go.
it really is. It's incredible. And anybody, if you've never been to a winery, if you've never, I can't recommend it enough, but to just see all of the little things and all of the people involved. And if any one of those elements goes wrong,
the wine's going to be completely different.
It's like a symphony. It really is. Like absolutely. If you have an orchestra and the cellist loses a string or something, it's all done. Like, and that's it. I don't know how much people think about like it's wine's $22 a bottle, right? So you go, plunk down your $22, but to think about what had to happen for this thing
to get in bottle
to be good.
To taste good wine.
Because, you know, that's the part. I mean, it's not one or two people doing this. There's
it's
a lot
army.
Of things, and there's so many different things that could go wrong.
It's brutal. They have to wake up before the crack of dawn to start harvesting because you want it to be cold when you're doing that for the same reason. You don't want it to be, you know, the heat spikes because you're going to overripen everything. So, you want it to be nice and chill to preserve that acidity. So they're up so early. I remember helping out at Carhartt in Santa Barbara and just... for the morning, and I was like, this is so nice to watch the sunrise over the vineyards, and they're like, yeah, do it. Peaceful for you.
It's something to keep in mind when you are drinking your wine is what went into it. I think about it a lot with spirits, especially I've been fortunate to get to taste, you know, things that are 64 years old, or
awesome.
Dragon Macallan of the things that I think about when I'm drinking it is not only what I'm tasting, but just something like that, the fact that
all the people.
Pretty much everybody that was involved with this is gone. right? You know?
Yeah.
They're gone, yet they're still here.
Exactly.
Because that, what the thing they did, and that's, I think that's a beauty when we were talking about aging wines, yeah, is if you get a chance to drink a wine that's 50 years old or something, remember that all of the people that made it have shuffled off this mortal coil.
But they made it so that you can enjoy it.
Exactly.
Decades later. It's beautiful. It's a time capsule. That's why I love wine.
I'm going to cry.
I know.
Let's take a break. Okay. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with Claire Copian, our summer wine extravaganza part two. They're all gone, Claire. Some of my favorite summertime cocktails are whiskey-based. The Mint Julep, a Gold Rush, a Paper Plane. And the whiskey I turn to as the base in those cocktails is Rabbit Hole. They make bourbon and rye in extremely small batches at their wonderful distillery in Louisville, Kentucky. Rabbit Hole's recipes are totally unique and were created by their founder, Bourbon Hall of Famer Kaveh Zamanian, who spares no expense in making great whiskey. Kaveh and his team have their own cooking methods and use top-of-the-line grains. They never chill filter, and they use barrels that are toasted, charred, and wood-fired, which almost nobody else in the business does. Trust me on this. What you end up with is a line of bourbon and rye with these really rich, deep flavors that are unlike anything you've ever tasted. The forecast for this summer is hot, 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 and I, for one, plan to cool down with some refreshing cocktails made with Rabbit Hole. Please, my friends, come join me. Summer is upon us, friends, and summer is the time for sipping on cold, refreshing cocktails made with the best ingredients. If I've said it once, I've said it a gajillion times. You can buy the best spirits in the world to make craft cocktails at home, but if you use crap mixers, you're going to get crap drinks. That's why I am all about Fresh Victor. Fresh Victor is a line of all-natural, clean-label cocktail mixers that brings the magic of master mixologists into your home. They feature a bunch of unique blends with contemporary flavors designed to suit any palate. All of the ingredients are fair trade sourced. There's no artificial anything. The mixers are produced at a 100% solar-powered juicing plant with absolutely no waste, none. And right now, Fresh Victor is offering a summertime special exclusively for you, dear listener. Simply go to freshvictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code FVDAN20. That's Fresh Victor, FVDAN20. To get 20% off your order. Now's the time to bust out the bikinis and bathing suits and to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market. And that's Fresh Victor.
Hey, this is Tiffany Thiessen, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn.
And we're back. Didn't those ads make you want to go out and buy some Fresh Victor and
I did.
Rabbit Hole?
You already got it? I did during the break.
Ah, love our sponsors. They keep us going. And you hear people
sponsors.
Are clapping for me.
The
yes,
sponsors.
They're clapping. There's some clapping going on here. We are at Hatchet Hall in Culver City, Michelin star restaurant. If you ever get a chance to get here, get here. You will not be disappointed. I ate here recently and tried out some new items they had on the menu, and it's simply one of the best restaurants in America, and that's all there is.
Was there a particular dish that knocked your socks off?
Oh man! All right, this is going to say peas.
Peas.
They do peas here that will blow your mind. The cornbread here is amazing.
Ooh,
all
sold.
The meats and fishes and oh man, I
fishies.
Love it. I'm taking you here.
Okay.
I will. Your Justin can't come, though. I can't afford to take you both. You're going to have to tell him about how the
sorry,
meal
honey,
was.
We're a package deal.
It's work. It's work. You're
you want
working.
Your plan. No.
That's right. Yes. all right. Let's. So to recap, part one, which you can go back and listen to, we did five wines. And now this is part two. We've done three. We got two more left. We're going to make it, Claire. We're almost there. The finish line is here.
You can do it.
It's so rough to just drink wine.
Oh,
okay.
God.
So now we're going to go with, we got two left. We got a rosé and a cabernet. Where do you want to go?
Let's go red so that we can finish with the rosé and cleanse our palates at the end of all of it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's
okay,
do it.
We got a Rodney Strong,
sure
which we
did.
Had on the last episode. This is it. We had a Rodney Strong white wine. Now we're going to do the 2017 Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon. This is from Sonoma County. It's where Rodney Strong. So you know a little bit about Rodney Strong. 1959, Rod Strong. Led by the Klein family since 1989. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, one of the bigger names in all of California wine. They do a big concert series up there. It's happening in June. They own 11 estate vineyards in Sonoma County, and we're talking about the best AVAs, Alexander Valley, Russian River, Chalk Hill, Dry Creek, Sonoma Coast. I mean, those are the gold standards right up there.
For the Sonoma Coast is huge, but yes.
This, this 2017... It comes from the Sonoma County Vineyard, hand-harvested. You brought that up before. What does that mean?
It means that they didn't just pass through with machines and gobble everything up. They had people in the vineyards picking every single bunch of grapes.
So anything that might be askew, they toss that?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Any bird's nests, lizards, they don't get chewed up in the... I'm serious, in the machine-harvested things?
I'm picking up notes of dead lizard.
Isn't it lovely?
Ooh. Okay.
Sorry.
So aged in French oak. Sure. So let's get in here. Let's do the nose on this puppy right
this
here.
This is our first bottle aged wine that we've tasted during our extravaganza.
It is
2017.
17.
Five
that makes,
years.
Let me do the math.
Six
hold
years
on.
Old.
Hold on. Carry the three. Six. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Still very bright though. She can go a little bit longer for sure.
Okay. 15% alcohol. The pH is 3.58, so that's
great.
You're going to get some tannic structure there on this thing, right?
Yes.
100% Cabernet, 24 months in French oak, 75% new.
Which makes sense.
What does that mean?
So new oak is going to impart, especially if it's French is going to be more notes of baking spices, maybe a little vanilla. American oak usually imparts vanilla, dill, coconut, sometimes banana. So if it's new, it's imparting those flavors and aromas into the wine. If it's old, barrels have been used multiple times, it's not doing that as much. It's just adding the tannin and softening up the wine, potentially making it more age-worthy. But when there's new, you're getting a little additional flavors.
So one of the notes I have here, it says the 2017 vintage will not... The all-time precipitation record was set by mid-April. So it was a rainy year, which that was probably the last time it rained until this year. What does that do? What does that do to the crops?
It can potentially, depending on when you get these huge onslaughts of rain, it can potentially dilute the fruit.
Okay.
So it's a little bit dangerous. You don't want to get too much rain on your fruit. Don't dilute the fruit.
You ever hear that? It's a Public Enemy song.
Sounds like a good t-shirt.
Don't dilute the fruit.
Don't dilute the fruit.
Should be.
Anyway.
Okay. okay.
You're like, please, no more shirts.
Can I get a little bit more? Because
of course you can.
I'm done. We're almost finished. We're almost finished.
Starting to drink.
So, okay. Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
All right. So now this one. It feels big to me. This
she's
feels
big.
Like a big. You got
she big. Oh, she big.
Like the mouthfeel to me.
Mm.
Velvety.
Very velvety. Very velvety tannins. Yeah, it's not too harsh. Which again, like they probably had some pretty ripe fruit that year. So the tannins on this tannin being, if you give that a swish around, it dries your mouth out. It almost feels like sandpaper on your teeth and your gums. You're like nah. Now, opposite of acid, right? Acid fills your mouth with water, tannin. And tannin's coming from the skin, seeds, stems of the grapes. And also the oak.
Okay.
So this is lovely to drink right now. Could age, though. Could age.
They're recommending 4 to 6 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is not like a decade.
But this is it. This is
thing.
A...
I think this can go a little bit longer, to be honest. The fruit is still very plush and juicy. I think it could go a little bit longer. It's starting to get the little hints of like that leatheriness.
This one, to me... is red meat.
Oh, right? For sure.
You just
no
got
doubt.
A, like a porterhouse
there's nothing
steak
else.
Or
otherwise,
something.
Otherwise, this would overwhelm anything lighter than that. You know, this needs rich stews, roasts, grilled meats, things that have high flavor profile.
When was the last time you had a stew?
Way too long ago. I live in California.
Who
when
makes
is it cold
stew?
Enough to have a stew? I guess I've had chili.
Katya, have you had stew any now?
I'm from the Midwest. Yeah.
But when was that? LJ, stew? Nobody does stew anymore. Maybe should we have a stew
California
night?
California's not a stew.
How about this?
Too hot.
How about we have a stew night one of these nights?
Oh,
we
yeah.
all get together and we just stew.
Oh, dude, my mom would make like this stew with Italian sausage and like ribs, and the ribs would, you know, the meat would fall off the bone and like potatoes, carrots, green beans, onion. And we would take the stew and we'd have like a piece of polenta, Italian, on the plate. Shave a little cheese over that and then put the stew on top of it and the cheese would
oh
melt
my
and
God,
you're just
it
like
sounds
decadent.
Great.
In the dead of winter in Chicago?
In Chicago.
Oh, babe.
All right, so you throw a party And you go and you invite everybody and you say, and they say, what should I bring? And you go, stew.
I would like you to bring stew. It's a stew party.
It's a stew party. I don't know that I've ever been to a stew party.
We're going
to
make
it
happen.
We should do it. We're throwing a stew party. All right, there you go. Something great here happened. Now, this Rodney Strong, the 2017 Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon is $60 a bottle. That's kind of where you're going to be, I think, for this sort of in Napa Cab.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Sonoma
Cab. I mean, it's all, yeah. So we understand what's going on up here. When you go up north, on to the west is Sonoma County, correct. And then you go over the mount, which is called, what's the hill there?
That's the Mayacamas Range. Mayacamas.
And then on the other side is Napa. The Napa Valley.
Is that the Mayacamas Range?
So what's the name of that mountain range, Claire?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you knew.
It's loading. Hatchet Hall doesn't have good service.
There is a mountain range that separates Sonoma County and Napa.
It's the Mayacamas Range.
I'm here with Claire Copy of Somme TV.
It's who the Mayacamas would, Mountain Range.
Of course know the answer.
It's the Mayacamas Mountain Range.
There you
go. I second-guessed myself, and I shouldn't have.
$60 a bottle. Yeah. I'm in. I'm on board. And now... the moment you've all been waiting, the moment Claire's certainly been waiting for. She keeps looking at her watch. How much longer I got to be here? No. I thought, by the way, how cool is this room?
Like, it's so cute.
We're in this little private dining room at Hatchet Hall, and it looks like something out of the 1800s. Like you rolled into some old, nice, would be
cute.
An old lodge or something. And
on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's really nice. And the dishes and all, it all just feels like... fancy, like a Emily Bronte would be sitting across from you or something.
I wish.
Yeah. All right.
Instead of you.
You. How dare you? This is what happens when we're 9 wines in. Okay. Now we're going to go to our final wine, which is, what are we having?
Kenny J.
Kenny J. Rosé. All right.
Don't you let me?
Let me get that. Kendall Jackson.
I'm gonna give you a ring.
2021. Vintner's Reserve.
Indeed.
California Rosé. We're going $17 a bottle for this. Okay. This is
similar to the Chardonnay.
51% of the grapes came from Santa Barbara County, 30% from Monterey County, 15% Mendocino, 4% Sonoma. 87% Pinot Noir, 9% Syrah, 3% Grenache, and 1% my favorite grape to pronounce, Mourvèdre. Dra.
Oui.
13.5% alcohol, pH at 3.7. So that's going to be, we're going to get some little acid in here, right? Right? No? Well, is that not right?
No, I think the higher it goes, the I don't know. Don't.
All right, don't.
Cut this.
Don't tell me.
Cut this.
So we got, again, I said $17 a bottle on this. Woo. We're going to get the...
That is a Jolly Rancher in a glass.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because the note... right up top is watermelon.
Fresh cut watermelon.
Hibiscus.
I see the hibiscus for sure.
Oh my God, it totally smells like a Jolly Rancher. Uh-huh. And I love that.
I know.
I love Jolly Rancher.
Hold on. The watermelon Jolly Rancher? Mm.
We talked about temperature to serve it. They're saying 50 degrees is where you should go with this.
Yeah. I'd go a little lower.
You go lower?
I go a little lower.
Okay.
As I said, everything's too chilled. I'm like, chill it more.
Like this with a charcuterie.
That would be nice. That'd be very nice.
Get a little charcuterie.
Wish him salami.
Yes. But again, you're getting apricot in here. That's what I get. Watermelon. You said
like tangerine.
Those Jolly Ranchers. But you're right. Yeah. I think so. Maybe the pH, it's a little bit, this is a little bit less acidic than some of the other rosés that we've had.
As the pH number gets higher, the acidity is.
So if you like softer rosés, softer, fruitier rosés, which I do like a softer, my favorite's going to be the crisp ones. Like, I like crisp because I feel like it's
crisp.
Cutting to the bone with me. But I do know people that like them softer. They don't be, you don't?
What?
You don't like softer rosés? Claire's like, maybe not.
No, but yes. The thing about rosé, it's so sad. Like, I think because we've gotten all of these really bright, fresh, crisp ones that are very cost effective, people kind of don't think of rosé as a wine anymore. Like, at Assam TV, we were chatting with this winemaker, Steve Mathiason of Mathiason Wines up in Napa. Gorgeous wines. And he makes a fantastic rosé that always sells out so quickly. He doesn't make much of it. And he was talking about how people don't really consider rosé to be a wine. It's almost like they consider it to be a seltzer. You know, it's just really? Something crushable, quick. So when you see rosé bottles that are over $30, they're like, why? It's a rosé. But there are rosés out there that can age, that have incredible structure, body, elegance, complexity. It's not just the porch pounder, crushable, you know, sit by the pool with it, which is great. There is a time and a place for that, always. But there's this huge range of rosé that people really do not know about.
It's... You bring up such an interesting point because we are living in the age of RTDs, which is the short for ready to drink.
Okay, I was like,
so now you can get anything in a can, and you know, I mean, obviously it was ushered in by White Claw and all that, but now you're getting, and that's probably having an impact on the way people consume wine.
Absolutely.
Now.
And notice, like, it's like always rosé in a can.
That's right. Yeah. How do you feel about
it's a
that?
Shame. Again, there's a time and a place for that. I want a crushable wine a lot of times, especially living in California where it gets really freaking hot in the summer. You want something easy drinking and fresh. But I have had some rosés that would just blow your mind. They're expensive, but aged rosé, holy crap. Yeah. Like some of the most beautiful wines in the world. From southern France mostly, but yeah, beautiful.
Sounds like Claire wants to do an episode where we do wines from France, and we'll have to do that. But this was our... I got to tell you, I feel like we've run the gauntlet here. We've made it. We've done two episodes. Not all heroes wear capes. That's what I'm saying. I mean, we could have gotten through six wines and waved the flag and said, we couldn't go anymore. But we pressed on, Claire. We did 10 wines over two episodes. And why did we do it? For the listener.
For the listener and the viewer.
You're welcome.
But now we're at the dusk.
This is it. The dusk. No, but I got to tell you, it's been really, it's always so great to hang with you.
Yeah.
And quickly, let's recap on what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. You've got a big summer coming up with SOM TV.
A lot of filming, a lot of really cool stuff coming out with SOM TV. It's a standalone streaming service for food and wine content, everything and anything you need to know, especially about wine, hundreds of hours of original content, documentaries. We've got some really cool stuff coming out this year. And it's only $49.99 for an entire year.
Entire year.
Deals, too. We do 25%
I'm
off.
A subscriber.
You
I
should
am.
Be.
And you're going to Aspen Food & Wine.
Going to Aspen Food & Wine this year again. It's the 40th year of Aspen Food & Wine. So it's going to be... It's already crazy amazing, but this year's probably going to be...
Are you hosting things there, or are you...
I don't know yet.
Like you're being coy. I might. I threatened Claire that I might show up, and she's like, "Oh, never mind. I'm not going." Yeah, I'm thinking about road tripping to Aspen. I really am. I was at the. I think I might have been at the first Aspen Food & Wine. I used to live there. And
so cool.
No, you said 40 years. No, I wasn't. I'm not that old. Am I? I am.
I don't think they would have let you in. You would have been like.
I've been to a lot of them, and it is a really fun event. And you're gonna be doing that, so we see some coverage from there.
Yep.
Anything beyond SOM TV you got going on? You making any movies? What do you got?
Am I making any movies? Yeah. No, I mean, I've made some
skydiving,
movies with
SOM
TV.
Are you?
No skydiving this year thus far. Some other fun little trips in the works. But
okay.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Well, it is such a... Oh, no. We can't go yet.
Oh, no.
We have to settle on your official title on the show. You are What We're Drinking
I'm
with
the wine
Dan Juns. No, I don't like Wine Wench. That was very bad of me to say.
The Wine Witch.
Ooh. Witch in a good way?
Mm-hmm.
Witchy wine woman?
Mm-hmm. I'm like Stevie Nicks in a glass.
You're Stevie.
I
you're
wish.
You're our resident Stevie Nicks in a glass.
I wish.
You want to be the
dare.
You want to be the wine witch?
I don't know. Actually, I don't like it anymore.
Let's go. Wine. Come on. We're smarter than
the
this.
The wine whisperer?
The wine whisperer.
I like that.
Claire Copey, official wine whisperer of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. Will you whisper something to the audience today?
I will see you all at dusk.
There you have it. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you on the next episode, which is going to be beer.
Ooh.
Follow Claire at Claire_Copey, C-O-P-P-I, on Instagram.
That is...
What's this called? ASMR.
ASMR.
I like it.
Me too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. and so never more shall we see you again.